Today is August the 3rd, year 2005. My name is Ole Terkelsen, and we are in Martinus Center Klint, Nykøbing Sjælland, 100 kilometers from Copenhagen. And I'm going to give an English lecture today with the title, My Will and God's Will. Yes, the title of today's lecture is My Will and God's Will. So you know me, but the question is, who is God? Sometimes, as a lecturer, people has asked me, do you believe in God? And sometimes I say yes, and then they turn around and won't talk to me anymore, because they think I'm a religious fanatic. But now I've decided to ask back, what do you think about God? What is God? What is God according to you? Because it shows up that people have many different conceptions of what is God. And for example, if you take the Christians, they have a world picture, and they think that the devil is the cause of all bad things, and God is the cause of all good things that happens. So if you take the totality of the Christian world picture, you have two parts. It's God and the devil. And they are fighting against each other. But it seems as if God is a little bit stronger than the devil. But anyway, there is two parts in the world. So when you take the totality, when you take everything that exists, you do not have a unity. You have a totality, but the totality consists of two different parts, God and devil, who is fighting against each other. And you could also say, normally they think we have friends, we have enemies, and then God is at some third place. God is something else than friends and enemies. But Martinus has a new cosmic definition of God. According to Martinus, God is everything that exists. God is all that exists. And that's a quite new conception of God, which means when you take the totality, everything that exists, this is also a unity. It is one living being. There's nothing outside God. But in the Christian world picture, there is something outside God. That is the devil. Or also that people and animals, and that is something outside God. But then there is an invisible God in his own place. So this is something new to regard that everything is God, and it's also interesting that that Martinus shows that everything is very good, and he can show that everything that happens is part of God, and from that reason it becomes more logical. Some weeks ago I had a lecture called Prayer as Science, because then prayer can become very logical and very scientific, and you can explain the relationship with God in a scientific way. Martinus, I think everybody here would agree on that prayer is the same as communication with God. If you're communicating with God, that is the same as a prayer. But then Martinus has a very vast definition of prayer. He says, all experiences in life is prayer. You cannot experience anything without it is, in fact, an expression of prayer, which means that prayer is communication with God. Because from the cosmological point of view, God is everything that exists. From one point of view, there is only two living beings. It is the individual living being and the living universe. According to Martinus, God is the living universe. So in a way, every single life experience is a communication with God, because it is a communication with the surrounding universe. Everything that surrounds you is the same as God. So all life experience is the same as prayer. And this makes it more logical, because you could compare a little bit. I think sometimes it seems to ordinary people that it becomes too religious when you talk about the will of God. And then For many years ago, I studied biology at the University of Copenhagen, and I also studied ecology. It's not necessary to study ecology in order to understand that it is illogical to destroy your environment. You can put toxic substances into the environment. You can pollute the environment. You can pollute the forests, the rivers, the lakes, the ocean. You can pollute all these things. But it's very illogical to pollute your surroundings, because afterwards you have yourself to live in polluted surroundings. So it's very illogical if you damage your surroundings. But that's also more like your relationship to the whole universe, to God. Because normally people, they divide people into friends and enemies. They are good, they are for me, that's enemies, they are against me. But it's so interesting that if you are against some people, if you have enemies, you could also say you are against God. You are against your environment. You are against your surrounding. But in the ecology, it's easy to understand that it is stupid to pollute the environment. It is stupid to destroy the environment. But in a way, you are doing the same thing when you are having enemies. And it's also interesting with how Martinus describes the fact to have enemies. Here you can see symbol number 16. It's the first here on the wall, and it is the eternal body, and it also expresses the karma law, the law of fate, and the energies that you're sending out, they're coming back to yourself. That means if you are fighting your enemy, you are fighting against yourself. And that's sort of stupid, to fight against yourself. But if you are fighting against living beings outside yourself, you're also fighting against God. So as you see, it's very, very stupid, because you are fighting against yourself, and that's stupid, to fight against yourself. But it's also stupid to fight against God. But you think that you are fighting against your enemy, because with this new conception of God, you can understand that all living beings are cells in the body of God. In the beginning of Leavitt's book 1, the Book of Life, volume 1, Martinus talks about that you have some energies, and there is some energies in the surrounding, where the energies from the surrounding are meeting your energies. There is a reaction, and this reaction is your life experience. So every single thing that you are doing to other living beings, you are also doing that to God. So what is God's will? Do you think that God is a suicide pilot? Is God intending to commit a suicide? Martinus has some cosmic analysis where he shows that life is something that exists. Natural science, the materialists, they try to explain when life was created. First there was a Big Bang, and some billions of years later maybe there came some life around. But Martinus thinks that something that is dead will rest dead, and something that is living will always be living. You have this sentence, the sum of energy is constant. You cannot make energy out of nothing, and you cannot destroy energy. You can transform energy from one form to the other form. Why does the energy exist? It just simply exists. If you say a thing is constant, it's the same as to say that it is eternal. So the energy is eternal, the energy is constant, and there is no reason why the energy exists. And in the same way, there is no reason why life exists. Life is constant. You cannot make life out of nothing, and you cannot destroy, but you can destroy the tool. If the living being wants to have life experiences in the physical world, it needs to have a tool. It needs to have a physical body. And with a physical body, it is a physical tool to have experiences in the physical world. But so your tool can die, but life and consciousness, that can never disappear. That means that the whole universe is one single living being, which is the sum of all other living beings. So why is the universe a living being? When did the universe start to be a living being? But that is one of the main points in the cosmology, that life is an eternal. Martinus also calls his work the eternal world picture. And it is this eternal world, this eternal point of view that makes his analysis so logical. And that's, I'm just trying to show that God cannot commit suicide. Life, that means you cannot destroy energy. You cannot make the energy disappear. You cannot make the life disappear. So the life is constant. God is constant. The life is existing forever. But when you're talking about God's will, that means when God is the totality, the wholeness, of course God will not commit a suicide. But if God could do something stupid to destroy itself, then life would be destroyed and then the whole universe would be destroyed. So in a way you could say God's will is to maintain life. God is not trying to destroy itself. So that means that God's will is that things take place which is good for the totality. So, but sometimes a living being can act in such a way that it is against the totality. When we are killing other living beings, we are killing cells in God's body. So then we are against God's will. And that is the big question. With my will and God's will. And sometimes God will the same thing as I will, but sometimes God is against me. And Martinus has explained very thoroughly about the conditions for life experience. The first condition is that there is something to experience. There must be contrasts. Without contrast, you cannot experience anything. You cannot appreciate one thing if you have not experienced the opposite. You might say, oh, today it's nice, it's warm. How do you know that it's warm? Because you have experienced once that it was cold. You might say, oh, I'm happy today. How do you know you are happy? Because once you were unhappy. If you've never been unhappy, you wouldn't know that you were happy. You cannot appreciate one single thing if you haven't experienced the contrast. So that also means in order to appreciate, to be one with God, to do God's will and so on, in order to appreciate that, you have to have had experienced the contrast. That means you are allowed to experience the contrast to God's will. And maybe it's a little bit of a paradox, but you are allowed to go against God's will. But it is included in God's will that you can go against God's will. So, you know, absolutely seen, you're not against God, but it is included in God's will that you can go against God's will. That means it is included in the world plan, that there is a kingdom where you can be egoistic, because the nature of God is an all-embracing love. God practices a universal love. God loves all living beings. God is altruistic. But you have the right to do the contrast. You have the right to be very egoistic. You have the right to go against God's will. And you can do that in the animal kingdom. And from this ecological point of view, you could say, you are egoistic when you are doing something which is an advantage for yourself, but you are damaging your surroundings. If you are destroying something in your surroundings, or if you are taking something, some of the resources from the surroundings, and you take them and make a monopoly, you want to take things from others. This is an advantage for you, but it is a disadvantage for the whole universe, the surrounding environment. It is a minus for the surrounding universe. Then you are egoistic, but you are doing your own will, but then your will is against God's will, because God's will is to maintain the wholeness. God's will is to maintain the environment, to maintain the whole universe. But now you want to destroy the surrounding universe to take advantages for yourself. And that is also called egoism. You are very selfish, but you are allowed to act in this way in the animal kingdom. Another aspect of the question of will, that was with this law of karma or law of fate, Martinus also have made a lot of analysis about the free will, the free will. And he has also, it's a little paradox, he says, you have 100% free will when you are doing God's will. But if I have to do God's will, I have no will, then I cannot do my own will. How should that be explained? But one special angle is that if, for example, you are taking the freedom from other people, you are limiting them. Maybe you are married and you say to your partner, you are not allowed to do this. I want you to stay at home. I want you to do this and this. Sometimes I've had weekend courses and there is a woman who says, I was so lucky that my husband was on a voyage. Otherwise, I am not allowed to go to Martinus lectures. So that shows that the husband, he was very jealous and he does not allow her to go to lectures. So in a way, he is taking some of her freedom. You could also lie and you can be the cause to that somebody is put into prison. Then you've also taken the freedom of another person. So there are many different examples how you can limit other people, how you can take their freedom. And then, that was what I would say before, with the law of karma, that will return to you. If you limit other people, you will be limited yourself. If you take the freedom from other people, the freedom will be taken from you. And you could say, if you are put into prison, or if you are imprisoned in your own house from your partner almost, then you do not have the freedom to what you want to do. And then you could say, when I am in prison, I do not have a free will because I cannot do what I want. But that also an interesting aspect of the free will. If you are limiting the free will of other people, you will have a karma where your own free will be limited. But if you are giving freedom to other living beings, your karma will be that you are free. And Martinus also once said that to practice neighborly love, to practice universal love, is the same as giving freedom. So then it becomes more logical. If you give freedom to others, you practice universal and neighborly love, you are not limiting the freedom of other people. Then your freedom is not limited by yourself, for yourself. So that means when you're doing God's will, which is to give freedom and love, you can only have a karma where you will get freedom and love. So that also means you will have 100% free will when you're doing God's will, because there is no limitations in your karma. But if you are doing something to limit others, there will be limitations in your karma, and then you would feel that you do not have your free will. There is different ways to communicate with God and to have a correspondence with God or communication with God. And prayer is communication with God, but it is not invented by priests or popes or holy men or by any other people. Prayer is something that exists in nature. It is not invented by man. That is some natural things that exists. And prayer has its start or beginning in the animal kingdom. Martinus often talks about the cry of the animal that is being killed. It is crying for death fear. And in a way, it is crying for help. And it is a prayer. Actually, Martinus also explains that the guardian angels in the spiritual world can hear or accept this cry from the animal and be ready to take it over when it is killed. Yes, I would just mention that in a question period, Martinus was talking about meat eating and about the big slaughteries. And he says that there are thousands and thousands of animals that are killed in the slaughteries. And he says on the spiritual plane, the animals are afraid of human beings. So when the animals are killed and go into the spiritual world, they are flying away from human beings because they are so afraid of them. But in this lecture, Martinus said something maybe a little bit surprising. He said there was a big concentration of guardian angels around the slaughteries. When you are slaughtering or butchering all the animals, there must be some spiritual beings on the spiritual plane to take care of the animals as soon as they are dead. He said something like that they are sending strong beams of some kind to the animals so the animals can be helped after this cruel act where they are killed. So I found that was quite interesting. So it looks as if that it is in vain that the animals are crying when they are killed, when they are crying out. I mean, in a way, this is the first beginning of prayer. They are praying for help. And prayer has many stages, and many think that the mission of the prayer is to pray for some miracle to happen. You have some very, very difficult situation, and then you are praying to God, and you want God to intervene and make a miracle and help you. So in the most primitive stages of prayer, you want to have advantages, you want to have help, you want to have miracles. It's almost like the small children when it is their birthday or at Christmas. They are making long lists of things they want to get. And that is the first stage of the prayer, that you are praying for things that you want to get yourself personally. That's the most primitive stage. And then Martinus explains that there is a certain logic in the prayer and this communication with God. Or you could also say that sometimes your will is the same as God's will, and then you are very satisfied. But sometimes God's will is not the same as your own will. You can pray for things very egoistically. You can, for now on, I think it is next year, this world championship in soccer and football. And the Danes are praying that they will win the gold medal. And the people in Turkey, they are also praying that they will have the golden medal. And the Germans, they also want the golden medal. And the English people. So what should the lovable God do? They want the gold medal. They want, and God wants to be kind and practice neighborly love. But unfortunately, there is only one set of gold medals. So what should God do? That means God cannot fulfill all the prayers. It is impossible. So sometimes it can also be that I am praying I want to be married to Britney Spears. and then Henry also wants to marry Britney Spears, and Sina wants to marry Britney Spears. And there's a lot of others, and they're praying to God. But how should God do? It's impossible to fulfill the prayers because there's so many who want that. That means that there is something illogical in the egoistic prayers, because if I want an advantage for me, which is sort of bad for the others, it cannot be fulfilled. It could also be I pray to win in the lottery. I want to win 100 million kroners. And there's a lot of other Danes who want to win 100 million kroners. And there's not so much money in Denmark that all the prayers can be fulfilled, or in the whole world. So what should God do? That means you are praying for having a big part of the resources of the earth. And people are praying to have so big resources, there's not enough resources on the earth. So quite physically, mathematically, or logically, it is not possible to fulfill these egoistic prayers. But sometimes people, they are very disappointed that they can't have their prayers fulfilled. But that is, it is illogical. It is not prayer as science that you think you can get everything you want. But it should be stressed that sometimes you have the right to pray for something that is good for yourself. You can pray for a good health. You can pray for having life force, having energy, to have inspiration to take your big problems. You can pray for a good health and so on. Then you might say that is also egoistic. Yes, but that cannot be a damage to others. If I am healthy and happy and have full of energy and life force, this is not a minus for the surrounding world. This is a plus. And additionally, Martinus speaks about the thing that we are built up by living organs. They are individual living beings. The cells are living beings. And they are living molecules. So in a way, if I'm praying for a good health, it is an altruistic prayer, because I'm also praying for my organs, that they have a good health. I'm praying for my cells, that they have a good health, that they have good conditions. So in that way, it is not egoistic to pray for the personal needs. If people, they need food, drink, a place to live, they need friends, they need sexuality and so on. So it is not egoistic to pray to have the natural needs fulfilled. But it can be egoistic to pray for too much of the resources of the whole planet Earth. Also, I used to have this example. If you are praying to having company, maybe you want a sexual partner, maybe you want a friend, and you are just praying to God to send a friend to you or to send a partner to you, but you are doing nothing. Everybody is very occupied. Maybe there are 1,000 lonely people, but they're just sitting at home and praying for somebody to come to visit. So sometimes you can have your wishes fulfilled. For example, if you have no sexual partner and you want some company or you want some help within your sexual life, if you pray, I want to help another lonely person and I want to have help myself, then it is easy for God to take 500 and send over to the other 500 because they had also prayed for, I would like to help the others and I would like to have help myself. Then there is a good balance in the things. And therefore also such prayers can often be fulfilled because that is within the laws of logic. You want to help others and I also want others to help me. Then there is a balance in this calculation. But Martinus also explains this situation. Maybe there is a mother who has a daughter that is very ill. And she wants the daughter to become cured. And she is praying to God. She is praying for a miracle. She is praying that her child shall become healthy again. And maybe she is praying hours every day, year after year after year. But nothing happens. The daughter is still ill. Maybe at the end she gets very angry with God. And she don't believe in God any longer because she says, now I've prayed to God for years and nothing has happened. I don't believe in God. Why don't God help me? But that is again to understand God's will. Because in a way, God wants to help us. But sometimes we cannot see what is helping us. Maybe it is necessary for the child in its evolution to be ill in order to learn something. And maybe it's also necessary for the mother to have a daughter who is sick in order to learn something. They would never come out of the animal kingdom if they could avoid all sufferings and problems by prayer. And most would you like to get out of the animal kingdom? Once in the camping area in the kitchen, there is often a big disorder. And there was a person who put up a sign writing, do the dishes after you are. Otherwise, you will never leave the animal kingdom. Because people, he and Clint, they want to leave the animal kingdom. But then the condition is that you are doing your dishes after you have eaten. But in the same way, you would never be able to leave the animal kingdom if you could not experience the sufferings. That is also one of the big things in Martinus' eternal world picture. He explains the cause of all the sufferings. It's a big problem for many people. Why shall I suffer? Why shall I be sick? Why shall I have all these problems? It seems to me that the world is an absurd theater, they might say or might think, because they cannot see the meaning, the reason why. And Martinus has shown this principle of contrast. The contrasts are necessary. It is absolutely necessary once to have been very unhappy in order to experience that you are happy. But also in a shorter time, it is good for you that you can experience the sufferings, because every time when you have felt pain and sufferings, that is developing your feelings. In the evolution, you have to do your experiences. And when you have experienced a lot of pain and sufferings and problems and illnesses, then you are developing your feelings, and then you can have compassion and feel with others. So that means that the fruit of the sufferings, or the essence of the fruit, is that you are given the most divine present you can get, and that is humanity and love you are becoming very humane. You are becoming humane and lovable because of this. So there is a reason why. So this, when this mother, when her prayers always were heard, she and her daughter might never leave the animal kingdom. They are some experiences that are needed. But for that reason, there are many people who are leaving God. They are becoming materialists. They don't think God is existing. They even can become angry with God. And it is really a bad thing. It's very magical if you can pray to God and say thank you to God and ask God for guidance. And you can be helped, and there can happen many small miracles. But on the contrary, if you are angry with God, you can almost go mentally insane, because there is also strong energies in being angry with God, because then there is some electrical reactions in your nervous system and in your brain, so you can become very, very ill, because then you are fighting against the universe, you are fighting against God, and you are condemned to losing this fight, because God and the universe, of course, cannot lose to you in this sort of fight. But I would say then, on a little bit higher level of the prayer, then you then can understand that this is God's will that takes place. That I have to have my faith, and my child have to have this faith, because it's something good for me, because that is included in God's plan, that is transforming me from an egoistic animal into a real human being. So you can understand this process, you can accept, but anyway it can be very hard to take, but also there you can have a big help in the prayer. Then you can pray that you want to have life force, energy, inspiration to take your faith, that you can get the energy to take the problems. And Martina says that the prayer is a fantastic thing. It can really give you a lot of energy and life force. Maybe the problems will not disappear, but they can seem as if they are very small, a bagatelle. You can bagatellize your problems with prayer. So that means the problems are still there, maybe the pain is still there, but you have got inspiration and force to take it another way. It's very unpleasant, but I can understand it has a meaning, it develops my feelings, I'm being transformed into a godlike being and so on. Then you can take it in another way. It is so bad if you think it's meaningless, it's absurd, then you cannot take so many problems. So Martina says that the prayer is really a fantastic present to people. It is a big source of energy. You can really have a lot of power. But on an even higher level, the prayer is not about having advantages or having energy and force. It is also a question to be guided, to know what is the best. And as I said, it seems to modern people that it's very religious that you want to do God's will. So sometimes I put it in another way. If you understand, there is you and the living universe. You could say, I want to be an advantage for the living universe, or in the ecology. I want to be an advantage for the environment. I will not pollute the environment. I will not damage the environment. I will be an advantage for the environment. That seems logical. I think most people can accept that kind of thinking. I don't want to pollute the environment. I want to be an advantage for the environment. But then actually you are saying, I want to do God's will. Because that is what is in God's will. Because if you are an advantage for the environment, you are an advantage for the totality. You are an advantage for the universe. And then the universe can go on working, life can go on working, because you are not destroying life, you are supporting life, you are supporting the totality, you are supporting the wholeness. So that is a good point of view in your correspondence with God, because then if you are in some situation and you don't know what to do, is it good or is it bad, is it right, is it wrong, what shall I do? Then Martinus really recommends prayer. Sometimes you go to a clairvoyant and ask, shall I sell my house, shall I have a new work, or should I have a divorce, or you go to the astrologist, or there is some aspects, maybe I should get a new job. You're trying to find out, what shall I do? And sometimes you are asking your friends, and it can be very difficult to take such a decision. Shall I sell my house or not? Shall I divorce or not? But Martina says that you have a fantastic tool in the prayer. You can pray to God and ask for guidance. And then maybe you have some personal wishes and you are allowed to express your personal wishes. You could say, I would like a bigger house if it is possible. But I want to be an advantage for the environment. I want to be an advantage for the universe, for the wholeness. And then such prayers are very often heard. And what you pray for, that is actually, you say, I want the absolute best solution, seen from the point of view of the totality, or the environment, or God. I want the best possible solution for everybody. If there should be something unpleasant, I want that it is me who should experience what is unpleasant. And that kinds of prayers are always fulfilled by God, because you want a better environment, you want to improve the environment, you don't want to kill God, you don't want to kill the environment. Of course, if you have a prayer which is destroying the environment, then actually you have a prayer where you want to destroy God. And if you have a prayer that is against the cosmic laws, the cosmic principles, actually you're praying, I want to kill God, and God is hearing this prayer. What should God do? God can do nothing about it. But if you want to be an advantage for the whole universe, for the environment, for the totality, of course God is positive to that kind, because that is what maintains life. That is what maintains the living universe. The living universe can go on functioning and working when you have this attitude, I do not want to destroy the universe, I want to be an advantage for the universe. So it is a very magical prayer. Martinus has written a little article, a little book about Gethsemane Garden. And that is where in Gethsemane, where Jesus, that is before the crucifixion. And maybe he knows, according to the prophecy, that he should be crucified and killed. But he also knows that he is God in a whole universe. He has the responsibility for the whole universe. And if he is crucified, letting himself being crucified, also the organs are killed, the cells are killing, it's a mass murder in microcosmos, and it's a big pain. So actually, he prays to God to avoid the problem, and it is expressed in the Bible in these words, that he prays to God, let this cup pass from me. This cup, often you have a toxic drink, a poison, sometimes you were sentenced to death, and then you should drink a poison from such a cup. And then it's a symbol, you can pray, let this cup pass from me. So you are praying, please let me avoid this problem. But he didn't stop there. But he said, thy will and not mine, thy will and not mine be done. So he wants God's will to come about and not his own will. And once I had a friend who was... No, he knew Martinus cosmology, and he was very sad because his wife would have divorced, and they had divorced, and he was very sad. Then I tried to say to him, have you tried to pray? Yes, but that didn't work. So I could find out what he had prayed about, because he had prayed that his wife should come back, and she didn't come back. So he said the prayer didn't work. But you can learn to pray in such a way that the prayer is always working. That is also, if you are praying that your own will, that my will is to come about, that my will is done, then you can be very disappointed. But if you always are praying that the will of God is to be done, should come about, then you can never become disappointed. If there is such a triangle drama, the highest kind of prayer you could have in that situation, maybe you are the one that are humiliated. But then if this person prays, we are three persons here, and if one is going to be sad, I want that I am the one to be sad, and I want the others to be happy. Because I want the wholeness, my environment, I want my environment to become happy. Then it doesn't matter if I am a little bit. This is the highest kind of prayer you can have. And then I would say there is always a little miracle that is happening, because then you are on the very same wavelength as God. And that was also what Jesus expressed in Gethsemane when he said, "Thy will and not my will be done." So he prays, "I want the best possible solution for everybody, irrespectively that it could be a disadvantage, that it could be unpleasant for me. You cannot come any higher." And Martinus says in the Bible it is described how an angel is coming to Jesus and giving him life force and power and energy. And then he went through the whole crucifixion. And this had such a big meaning for the whole of mankind. Martinus said this is the biggest moment in the world history when Jesus on the cross prayed for the people who tortured him and killed him. And he said, "Father, forgive them. They do not know what they are doing." It was not only a personal event. He said that it was a global event. He said the planet Earth got a cosmic glimpse. Until the crucifixion, it was logical to take revenge and be against your enemies, because they had never seen anything else. They could not imagine that you could do. But when Jesus had shown it, Martinus said, from that point, it was no longer logical to take revenge. So it was a really big, and also in the Bible, it's something described with earthquake and the temple was destroyed, and there was something with the moon and the dead was rising from their graves. So it was a really big global event. But Martinus said it was not the dead who stood up from the graves, but it was actually cosmic beings who were attending this big sermon, this big service of God when they saw this crucifixion. So it was a big event. So that even though Jesus had to suffer, then it was better for the wholeness that it was for billions and billions of people, hundreds and 2,000 years, they have had that as a leading star. They have learned so much from this crucifixion. So that was God's will. So then you can never be disappointed. Maybe you are, I don't know, if you're working in a slaughtery and you've heard about the ideal food, maybe you want to have a new work, then you can also pray to God in order to have a new work, because you don't want to kill the animals, you want to be an advantage. And if you pray in that way, maybe in very short time you will get a new job. So very often you can have your personal. Maybe you have a job and you don't like your job. You pray to God, "Please give me a new job. But thy will be done and not mine." If you say so, it could be that God thinks it's best for you to stay in the job that you don't like. But then it's very important for yourself that you know, okay, I don't like my boss. He always treats me badly. But then you can say, okay, it might be good for me to have this experience. So I understand it's important for me. It is unpleasant. So it is not always that you have your own will. Sometimes, but if you always finish your prayer with the words, you have your own personal prayer, but if you additionally say, "Thy will be done and not mine," then you will always be heard. Then you can never be disappointed, because sometimes there is this solution that is unpleasant for you, but then you know this is the best thing for the whole universe that I am in this situation, and then you can have a very positive attitude to it. But actually, the deepest meaning of prayer, that is only conversation, not only, but it is conversation with God. Maybe it is a little bit surprising, but what is really the meaning of prayer, that is that you shall get a new friend. You shall become friend with God, or you should regard life as a friend. Sometimes people say, "Why should I pray to God? Because then he has to listen to me, and that is sort of waste of time. I don't want to rob his time. Let him be in peace. I don't want to talk to him." But Martinus makes this comparison that if in a family one child says, "I don't want to talk to my parents," then I'm taking their time. So, but then you're totally autistic. I mean, it's a strange family life if a child don't want to talk to the parents. It's a very odd family life. The most natural is that the children are talking to their parents. So it's a good thing to talk to your parents, because that can give a very harmonious family life. In the same way, it is also more harmonious that you are talking to God. And it's also interesting that the surrounding life is God. We have such a joke in Denmark. We say, wake up, a new day is threatening. So sometimes people, they see life or the day as a threat. There will be new catastrophes today. I wonder what the new catastrophes will be this day. And you are sort of afraid of the life. Maybe I'll lose my partner. I'll lose my job. I will lose my health. And you're a little bit afraid of life. So this is also sort of the ultimate goal with prayer, that you feel very safe and secure in your relationship to God, but also in according to life. I think Martinus, he said once that he loved God so innerly. He loved God so strongly. Also, you could also say that you should come to such a point where you say, I love life. You should get a feeling, life is an advantage for me. Life is for me. It's easier to maybe to understand God is an advantage for me. God is an advantage for me. But it's also important to understand that God and life is the same. Martinus says, if a man says, I have a good relationship to God, but I have got a lot of enemies, he's lying. Because all these people he's against, they are cells in God, so he's against God. On the other hand, if a person says, I have a good relationship to all other living beings, but I have no relationship to God or bad relationship to God, that's not true either. Because if you have a good relationship to all living beings around you, you automatically also have a good relationship to God. So you can train your relationship to God in two ways. You can train to see God represented in all other living beings. You are surrounded in the physical world by God. But you also have this telepathic contact with God. In the classical prayer, you also can talk to God. But that is a little bit surprising that the highest goal or the highest level of the prayer is actually only conversation with God. You can talk to God about all your problems and all your doings. I forgot a little bit. That was about the guidance. I would like to mention this little example. Already as a child, Martinus had a very strong relationship to God. And then Martinus prayed to God to tell him if Jesus could do a certain thing or not. When Martinus did not do, shall I do this or shall I not do this? Then he prayed to God to know if Jesus could do it. And then he said very quickly, he felt, yes, Jesus could do it. Then he did it. Or he could feel, no, Jesus could not do it. And then he didn't do it. So he was sort of educated by God. But that is also, we can also use the prayer in the same way. If we want the best possible solution, we can come with our own wish. But then we say, I want the best possible solution for the whole environment. I want the best possible solution for the whole universe. Which also means, with a religious expression, I want God's will to be done. Then it is very, very strong and very magical. That is, and as Martinus explains, when Jesus had this attitude in Gethsemane, there came an angel to him. But if you can pray in the same way, Martinus guarantees that a guardian angel will enter your aura when you have this attitude. For example, in this divorce, if the humiliated person could pray for the two others to be happy, that he should take the unhappiness, then Martinus guarantees that there will be a guardian angel who goes into his aura. And if you don't know what is right, if you have this attitude, I want the best possible solution, also when it's unpleasant for me, then Martinus says it is so easy for a guardian angel to put the right idea into your head. And after such a prayer, you would feel it as if you get an idea. When you are finished praying, the first thought you are having, the first idea that is entering your head is the solution. It's a little bit of intuition, but it can be a guardian angel who has helped you. So in that way, this is a much higher level of prayer when you're using it as a guideline instead of as a tool to experience, to have all your egoistic prayers fulfilled. So as I said, it is included in God's will that in the animal kingdom you can go against God's will. But the animals are very egoistic. They get karma for their egoism. And they get a lot of suffering, and when they get a lot of suffering, they are developing their feelings, and they are becoming more humane, and they are becoming more lovable. So they are developing, and when you have suffered, so you can suffer so much that you don't want others to suffer. And then you have changed your attitude. You don't want to be the cause of the sufferings of others. You want to help the others. Then it is your own will. I want to help the others. I want to be an advantage for the wholeness or for the environment. But when you have started to want to help the wholeness, you have actually made God's will your own will. Because God's will is to maintain the living universe so it works. And when it is your own interest that you want to help and maintain life, Martinus talks about the law of life. If you are sort of an advantage for others, you can help others, you are living according to the law of life. But if you are hurting or damaging others, you are living against the law of life. Jesus, he was a Christ being or a God-like being. He could only be an advantage for living beings. And then he was living according to the law of life. In a way, it's very simple. You have a free choice. You can live against the law of life or you can live along the law of life. And it's almost the same thing to say, if you are living according to the law of life to be a benefit and a pleasure, an advantage for others, you are doing God's will. But if you are living against the law of life, if you are acting in an egoistic way and having personal advantages, then you are doing your own will, and then, as I said, you are against the law of life. But you will reach a point where your will is the same as God's will, because you want to practice neighborly love, and that is also the nature of God. And then when you are doing God's will, have made that your own will, then you also have this 100% free will, because there is no limitations. So the purpose of the physical world, that is to develop minerals into plants, into animals, into terrestrial man, and into perfect living beings. The physical world is the school of life. The purpose of the physical world is to develop a cosmic consciousness. And to get cosmic consciousness is also the same as being conscious in God's nature, in God's life. Martinus speaks about gradually you can become very strong inspirations, and then you can experience cosmic glimpses. And maybe in one life you have one cosmic glimpse, in the next life you have one cosmic glimpse. Maybe there will come a life with several cosmic glimpses, and at the end it is a permanent stage. And what do you experience when you get cosmic glimpses and cosmic consciousness? You can experience that everything is very good. You can experience what you thought was evil and bad and sufferings is love in disguise. Once Martinus in this lecture hall said, the purpose of Martinus Center is to teach to people or to learn people to see with God's eyes. How do God look on life? God sees on life in this way. Everything is very good. So that is also what we should learn here in the center, to see that everything is very good. But there is so many unpleasant things. And then this is so ingenious by Martinus. He has the pleasant good and the unpleasant good. Martinus can show there is a meaning with the sufferings. It's necessary according to the contrast principle, and it is necessary in the humane evolution that you can have these experiences. So it is good, it is an advantage, but it is certainly unpleasant. But it's a very ingenious expression, the pleasant good and the unpleasant good. And as you are studying these analyses, you can get a theoretical cosmic consciousness when you theoretically understand that everything is very good. You have got theoretical cosmic consciousness. But you can, by your own senses, experience the love of God, that everything is very good. You can experience the consciousness of God. And that is the end of this evolution. Thank you for your attention.